I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to the All About Jack podcast. The following conversation is with my friend, Dr. Serena Higgins, about a short and to the point audio-only biography on C.S. Lewis. So join us for the next half hour to talk about her biography that is just over 2.5 hours. Well, welcome back to the show, Serena.
I'm very glad to be back again with you, William. Thank you for asking me on.
Well, certainly. Well, now let's go ahead and jump in by talking about back in mid-November of 2023. We're recording this just at the beginning of February 2024, but not that long ago, you had an Audible original entitled C.S. Lewis, Writer, Scholar, Seeker. And so this was released as part of what's known as the Great Courses. So let's start out with this. You know, with so many biographies available, what makes your audio-only presentation unique?
Yes, that's a good question, because as a reader and reviewer of many biographies, I often ask that question myself. The first thing that makes it unique is simply the format, that it is an audio-only presentation. And as I wrote it, I actually dictated to my phone because I thought this is going to end up as an audio, a verbal presentation. What I'm writing is a script. So therefore, I use a particular tone of address. I wrote it in a certain way to have that kind of something between a lecture and a conversation tone. So hopefully it will appeal to an audience who may not pick up a print book or an ebook for whatever reason, but prefer to listen to it in audio, which I often do myself. It is therefore also only available as an audio original or through the teaching company and Wondrium. So that's how people have to get a hold of it. But there is something unique about the content, I think, and it's my particular combination of biography and literary criticism. It is definitely not a biography proper. I don't simply start at the beginning of Lewis's life and talk through all the details of what happened to him and what he did and so forth. Instead, I talk about a little bit of his life and then some of the books that are important to either that phase of his life or some of his major ideas at the time. So in each of the lectures, listeners will get certain parts of his life, and then I'll dive more deeply into the text. So for the literary criticism part, I try to bring my work as a scholar and an academic and a teacher, but to an audience who is not themselves necessarily professional academics. So I sort of maybe boil down the essence of some of the scholarship on Lewis for a popular audience. And perhaps one more little difference is my particular perspective. I am not a medievalist, which a lot of scholars of Lewis and Tolkien tend to be, so that they can bring the knowledge of the literature that those men studied to their discussions of the Inklings. Instead, I'm a modernist, and I like to look at Lewis and friends in that context and discuss how they were interacting with the ideas and other authors of their times. And I may have a little more of a progressive viewpoint than some other scholars of Lewis, and so I discuss some of the problems that 21st century readers may have when they encounter his works.
Well, now, given you're more known as an expert on a friend of Lewis, which we'll talk about in some detail a little bit later, who is Charles Williams, how did you end up creating your own concise work about Lewis?
Well, it's just because the teaching company headhunted me for this. Their talent recruiter approached me and offered me this course, and I jumped at the chance to be part of the Great Courses series, and I hope that they will come back and ask me to do more, perhaps one on Charles Williams.
Yes, that would be quite interesting. Yes, as people who may be not familiar with him will talk some about, there are many interesting things about him that makes him quite different than Lewis, but yes, very good. Well, now let's look at the content of your material here. Again, it's called C.S. Lewis, Writer, Scholar, Seeker. It's divided into 6 parts, with the first 2 lectures focusing, for me, I summed it up more or less as his life in Narnia. What are a few key points you don't want the listener to miss?
Yeah, and you're right about the organization, and my editor and I went back and forth on all different approaches we could take. Should we go purely chronological? Should we do it strictly by genre? And we decided on sort of a combination of life themes and genres. We found what we thought was a more organic approach. So yeah, more or less on his life and the Narnia Chronicles. Oh, there are so many key points, but Owen Barfield had something interesting he said about Lewis that I find helpful. Let's see if I can get the quote right. I think he said, Whatever Lewis thought about everything is present in what Lewis wrote about anything. So if I miss out an important one now, you just start reading and looking at Lewis's themes, and it'll sort of pull the others in. But that said, I think his lifelong search for what he sometimes called joy is a very important key point that listeners might want to pay attention to. He had this feeling, especially as a child and a young man, that he couldn't quite describe. He kept searching for the right word for it. In his letters to young friends, they called it with a capital I. And then he tried so many different words and phrases, the divine discontent, the heavenly heraldry. He tried this German romantic word, Sehnsucht. He finally settled on joy. He even tried the word romanticism for it and got into all kinds of linguistic trouble with that. But I think that may be the one key theme of Lewis's whole life, is that he would get these flashes of this kind of beautiful longing. It was this great desire for something, but the very feeling itself was beautiful and enjoyable and desirable. And he ultimately decided that this feeling was basically a little taste or glimpse of heaven, and it was sort of God's way of wooing him, of calling him to himself. But he sought to understand and then to describe that, and then later to evoke it in his readers all his life. There are a few other things. I do discuss how Narnia is not an allegory and why that matters and how it can help us to read it and understand it. As I was thinking through the Narnia Chronicles, I was sort of making little plot summaries in my head, and I realized every one of the books is about the restoration of the correct ruler, the right king or queen, or kings or queens, or Aslan himself. And it struck me as I was writing this series that the importance of good rulers is a crucial theme for us right now, especially Americans, but other parts of the world as well. We have to make some decisions about leaders that will have huge national, global, and historical implications. And the books are about rulers who have moral integrity and compassion and humility. And I realized that was an important theme. I do also want the listeners to pay attention for some things that they might not encounter in other works, which is some of the more difficult or complicated sides of Lewis's personality. And also the fact that he was a war poet. We don't think of him so much along with the Siegfried Sassoon, Graves, and those other Wilfred Owen, those other war poets, but he was. He fought in the trenches of World War I, and was wounded and wrote poetry about that experience. I think it puts him into context, into a different sort of literary community than we often consider. And because friendship and community were absolutely essential to him, I think it's good to look at that early source of community for him as well. Those are a few of them. I mean, you may have some others that spring to mind from your listening into it, and I'm sure everyone else will also.
Yes, well, very good. As we are noting here in terms of it being a briefer, or maybe we haven't underscored that as much, but so you had to boil things down, and so it was fascinating being familiar, of course, with Lewis's life and talked with many people who've done different biographies and having read them to where I came away enjoying. While still knowing some other aspects, but if you were to boil things down, so to speak, and focus in on certain aspects that are really really essential, which is a word, of course, that I like with my
You
website and
bet.
stuff. But yeah, so it was very good. So, but yeah, and hopefully, in terms of what the listener would take away from it, then they can build on that with other books about him. And so yours can be a good springboard. And yet, it's also, I found it as a good summary, being already familiar with those other works.
Good. Yeah, it's just under 2.5 hours, I think, altogether listening time. Fairly short.
Well, now, before considering some details about the rest, what are some elements that you cut out or would have added if you had an extra lecture or two possible?
Well, if anybody ever gives me extra time to talk about C.S. Lewis, I'll just go on and on about Till We Have Faces. And if somebody says, "Would you like to do a 30-hour long-form podcast in which you talk through every line of that novel?" Sure, sign me up. So I would have loved to do more on that book, but as you said, given that it's kind of an overview, I had to share that lecture with, I think it was The Great Divorce and the Screwtape Letters on his theological fiction. I could have talked a great deal more about his Christian Platonism because that's such an essential, there's that word again, part of his
Ah, yes.
thought. But I'm not sure that that part is quite as appealing to today's reader or to the general reader, right? Now, if I didn't use that terminology, instead I just talked about his idea that somewhere else there is a reality that is realer than real, right? That's more solid than this reality, then we can maybe understand that because our own temporal reality can be rather unsatisfactory on occasion.
Right.
So perhaps if we thought about it that way, but I didn't want to have to dive too deeply into the philosophy. And also, I wanted this to have very broad appeal, not just to Christians themselves, but to anyone who's interested in literature of his genres or of the time period, you know, of fantasy and so forth. There were a whole bunch of other themes. I polled people on social media before I began to see what their favorite books by Lewis were and what themes were most important to them. And so there were many that I was able to work in, but I didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the nature of evil or the free will predestination debate, both of which he has really fascinating perspectives on. I didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about just how beautiful and powerful grace is in his works and how it literally comes to life as characters. It's a powerful reality in his books. And I was going to say I didn't talk a whole lot about the further up, further in theme, but given that that's actually an aspect of Christian Platonism, you can see
Yeah.
why. So those are a few things. I'm sure there's more that I could have covered if I'd had a lot of time, but I was pleased with how much material one can cover in these little half hour lectures with a little bit of bio, some summary, and then deep dives on a few points.
Right, yes, and I'm sure it is a challenge in terms of any kind of like writing project, even though, as we're noting, this is audio only, where when you have to crystallize things and it forces you to approach things, maybe not necessarily differently, but it challenges you to be concise. And then if you need to, expand on things, you can. Or in this case, you're leaving the listener with the ability to then move on and to build on some of the things that you will point out. But then hopefully then there was also some things that people found fresh, which I believe I did. And I remember looking at a review where I don't know that we're getting into it, but that someone was sort of taking you to task and saying about being critical about Lewis in some aspect, which I didn't find that you were acknowledging how it could be perceived as a weakness, essentially, was how I took it. But yes.
Yeah, I think we have to be very, very honest with studying the darker sides of any author, that we really need to consider that. I mean, I want to prepare readers so that they're not shocked and horrified if they come across something, right? I want them to be equipped with discernment because every writer is a broken and wounded person, and that may or may not come through in their works, but it certainly does when we study their lives.
Yes. But now looking at the third talk, and the final one that you deal with the factual Lewis per se, his Christian writings and then his literary criticism, what are some of the most important details from these lectures, would you say?
I have always found the story of Lewis's conversion to first theism and then Christianity really fascinating because it's such a combination of the intellectual and the what you could maybe call the experiential or the emotional or the personal. Because he studied philosophies and religions and literature in great detail, and he came to the intellectual persuasion that there was something about the Gospels in the New Testament that carried heft. I mean, he knew how to read ancient texts, and he read them, and he said, these read like, well, nowadays we'd probably say journalism, right? They read differently than the ancient myths and legends. And his mind was rationally convinced of the truth of Christianity, or as I say, at least theism first. But that's not all, right? It wasn't just that he got intellectually persuaded. And so if you're only smart enough, you know, if everybody's only smart enough, they'd all become Christians, because then there'd be a division by IQ. But it wasn't just that, because he also had this kind of inexplicable, or we could say ineffable, right? Beyond language, this experience of the presence of God and of the love of Jesus. And he doesn't even really know exactly what happened. I mean, he says he was riding in the sidecar of his brother's motorcycle on the way to the zoo. And when he left the house, he did not believe Jesus was the Son of God. And when he got there, he did. And from then on, he felt the personal presence of the Lord, and was in constant conversation with God and so forth. So that's just very fascinating to me, as is the intentional way he set about changing his life to align it with the new moral code. So as soon as he converted, he was like, well, now I have to live a certain way, darn. But then he went about it, and he stripped out of his life those things that he thought didn't line up with his ethics. That's pretty admirable. I mean, for those of
Definitely.
us who maybe were sort of cradle Christians or something, it's a slightly different experience. But I do not have that same story of like, well, such and such is wicked, I'm just going to strip it out of my life. It's not quite that simple. But he was highly disciplined and committed to his moral code. And these things come out in his writings, I think, both his theological writings and his more academic stuff, that he really balances logic and then this appeal to the imagination, and even an appeal to our incarnate nature, our nature as embodied beings, that all of his writings are full of really vivid descriptions. They've got a lot of pictures in them, even when he's talking about abstract concepts. I don't mean Pauline Baynes illustrations, that's something else. I mean, in his writing,
Right.
he writes pictures with his words, and kind of all of his themes are sort of there at once, that his ideas cohered in a way that not all authors do, and that certainly mine do not. So I find that admirable. So those are some things that stuck out to me as I reread those works of his and prepared those lectures.
Very good. Well, now the other two sections are about Lewis's other fiction. What are people missing from not being familiar with these works by him?
Oh, wow. I mean, I know you would agree with me. Like, what aren't they missing? There's so much. They're such beautiful works. And so specifically, as I mentioned before, it's The Great Divorce, Screwtape Letters, Till We Have Faces, and then what I like to call the Ransom Cycle, more popularly known as the Space Trilogy. Well, he has a way of taking a theological idea and then bringing it to life in a story, so that it's just there in the story in an embodied way. So he's not really kind of lecturing at you. Now, there are some lectury moments, like when the George MacDonald character in The Great Divorce sits down and like preaches at the C.S. Lewis character. But there are other moments when, to pick an example that springs to mind, when our character in The Great Divorce is limping along across this grass that's too solid for his ghostly feet, and he sees a waterfall. And there seems to be a bright spirit that is infinitely pouring itself down the waterfall and kind of gives a flickering image, almost like one crucified. So even without that last phrase, just the idea of something that is constantly pouring itself or himself out for others, and yet is laughing with a delighted joy in this constant sacrifice. I mean, that's just a beautiful way of taking a theological concept and embodying it or incarnating it in the landscape. And that's probably not the best example that I just picked, but his works are full of examples like that, where his theology takes on flesh or other matter. And similarly with his idea of joy or Sehnsucht, when I read, say, Perelandra, I find that he has brought that to life in the landscape, or maybe even more so in Out of the Silent Planet, because on the planet Malacandra, the gravity is less than on Earth. So everything, the landscape features and the animals and the living beings on the planet, they're all taller and thinner than they are on Earth. So the mountains are impossibly tall and thin and go to needle-like points. Everything has this skyward reaching theme. It's like in Chaucer's phrase, they have this kindly inclining towards the heavens, like heaven is just pulling everything up, because it turns out that planet is unfallen. Its people never ate of the fruit in the Garden of Eden. So he takes this theological idea but brings it to life in a way that doesn't require any preaching, because it's just there in the landscape. And I find these works of fiction just beautiful. They have memorable images. And he has a skill that he very intentionally and carefully cultivated of picking very good analogies, metaphors, and similes, and comparisons, and so forth. And then in the fiction, they just come to life as characters or objects or settings. And I think they work really well. So those are some things people are missing, as well as just excellent stories and characters you won't forget.
Yeah, definitely. Those who have listened to my podcast know I've mentioned from time to time that I'm not a very strong reader. Fiction works are not my interest, and yet Lewis is one of the ones that I've read several from. There is just a small handful, and so his works definitely, stand out because he paints a great picture. It evokes so much the atmosphere that I'm sure others have talked about, but I'm thinking in terms of what Michael Ward had noted in terms of with the Narnia stories and such. And so, yeah, Lewis is not just he's great with the nonfiction works that people that are just familiar with him maybe from his Christian writings or even just Narnia, which has very good vivid. He paints a picture very well. And in terms of the story he's telling and such, but these other works, yes, people are missing so much by not diving into them.
Do you think that one of the reasons that you like these works of fiction as opposed to others might also be the writing style? It's so clear. It's so straightforward, right? You don't have to get lost like diagramming a sentence in order to figure out what he's saying, like you do with some, like, I don't know, Henry James or something like that.
Yes, yeah, that it probably does definitely, yeah, his way of bringing things and in fact you just bring to mind when I was in my earlier days and contemplating about writing and well I won't call it out because it would be kind of unfair, but it was I was I was encouraged to okay read someone who is a book and pay attention to the writing style and such, and then it happened to be a book from a more ancient writer, and it was kind of cumbersome, and so it wasn't the best clear writing. And so from then on, I didn't try to pay attention in that way. Maybe should have just tried for another one. But yes, but Lewis's clearness in his writing does just stand out to where he was able to
Oh,
tell
try
the
to be a
stories.
professional editor. I want to read some of those older works with the red pen in my hand. Don't tell Mary Shelley I said that.
Yes. Well, now, so earlier we were talking about Charles Williams. So let's go ahead and look in that direction then. We were both at the Mary Need Wade Center at Wheaton College a couple of months ago. Now that was back in last year since we're in 2024 now recording, but it was still just not that many months ago. So you made some exciting discoveries. Share first, why you were researching Williams and what are some of your findings?
Oh, that was such a wonderful time. It was great to be there together with you and a bunch of folks from the Northwind Seminary, and a lot of people discovered great things. And there've been some publications from it already. Well, Charles Williams is kind of the main scholarly topic that I investigate, along with William Butler Yeats and some of their contemporaries. But specifically, I have a contract for a book by Apocryphile Press, and that manuscript is due in June for a work entitled "The Oddest Inkling: An Introduction to Charles Williams." And there is no book like that for Williams. We were talking about the proliferation of biographies on Lewis earlier. There's really only one, or one and then a bad one, on Charles Williams. And there's an introductory volume to the novels only, but not to Williams' other works. So this is badly needed. He was a brilliant writer, but unlike Williams, unlike C.S. Lewis, could not write those clear, straightforward sentences. So he requires more introduction. So I was researching for that. And then my next project after that book is finally, hopefully, Lord willing, the annotated Arthuriad of Charles Williams, which will take a bit more work. So while I was there, the very last day, 45 minutes before closing time on the very last day, as I was working my way through these stacks of folders of materials by and about Williams, I discovered two folders, one of which had never been signed out by any other scholar, and the other of which had only been signed out by one other scholar, who's a good friend of mine, Eric Rauscher. And they were both folders of unpublished poetry. previously unpublished poetry by Charles Williams. Now, I have yet to go through all of it and collate it and see some of it is drafts for works that were published. Some of it has been published in an edition by David Llewellyn Dodds, who collected all the stuff that wasn't previously in a volume. But I do believe that there's some material in there that has never seen the light of day. And I'm planning to be back at the Wade 1 month from now, and I will double check and get permission from the estate to transcribe stuff. So perhaps we may even see another volume of Williams's poetry forthcoming in future years, or at least a larger edition of the Arthurian stuff with drafts and additional versions, something of that nature. So that was very exciting.
Oh, very good. And then I can't recall if you're very active with the website, which has a similar name, if not the name. But let's go ahead and I guess here I was going to be talking about your other books here to wrap up here. But where can people find information about things that you the things that you have a interest in?
Yeah, there are three main places. Thank you for that. Or I suppose four main places. There is the blog, The Oddest Inkling, which is not as active as it once was, but I plan to use it between now and June as a sort of a place for discussion and drafts of materials that will eventually make their way into the book in a different form. So if people are real Charles Williams fans, they can go to The Oddest Inkling. The place where they can find links to everything else is just sorinahiggins.com. I also have a writing consultancy where people can hire me and a few other very talented editors and writing coaches. It's called Word Horde, word with a Y, which makes me think of dragons. So we are dragons on our word horde. I also have a patronage page on Buy Me a Coffee, but all this stuff is linked from sorinahiggins.com. So there they can get news about the Oddest Inkling book, the Annotated Arthuriad. I also have a publisher looking at a book coming out of my dissertation about occult modernist playwrights. And then I have a volume of my own original short stories that's out with a publisher considering it right now. So it's an exciting time for me with a lot of things just in the early stages or in the looking for a publisher stage. I would actually love to have people coming in to, read and give critiques and suggestions and be part of the whole community with all these works that are in the early stages or coming out soon.
Ah, very good. Yes, and of course we'll have a link to as much as well. You've got the gateway with your name, but I'm sure I'll also include some of the other ones in the
Sure.
description or show notes. But now you have some previous publications. Tell us about that to kind of wrap up here.
Okay, yeah. The main work was an edited volume called The Inklings and King Arthur. So it was about how Lewis, Tolkien, Williams, and Owen Barfield interacted with the Arthurian legends over time. So I edited that collection, and it's full of works by an excellent array of scholars. I was so blessed to work with those chapter writers. There are two works of Charles Williams's that I've worked on. The Chapel of the Thorn is a play that I was able to bring out, and there's an edition of his Arthurian poetry for which I wrote the introduction. I also have two little books of poetry out there that may be a little harder to find these days, but maybe there's some copies on Amazon or some used bookstore somewhere.
Okay. Oh, very good. Well, again, we've been talking to you. I guess we will just wrap up with a final question to summarize why people would want to give a listen to the Audible, the work C.S. Lewis, writer, scholar, and seeker with the great courses. Again, kind of summarize that as we close.
Yeah, thanks. I hope that I've struck a tone that it could appeal to a wide listenership, if that's a word. I tried to make it, sort of engaging and not too lectury, a little more chatty, and to try to give a good overview of everything he did and then a deeper dive here and there into some things. So I hope that there'll be something new for people who know Lewis really well, like yourself. And certainly for someone who's been thinking about, oh, maybe I've only read the Narnia Chronicles, what else did he write? There's a lot of information there. Or those who are considering diving into scholarship on C.S. Lewis, I touch on some of the important ideas there to maybe inspire future grad students or academics. So I hope it's a fairly wide-ranging with work with a broad appeal. That was the goal anyway.
Yeah, very good. Yes, and that's that's how I came away from it, being familiar with a lot of different books out there. I haven't by any means read all of them, but anything in the last 15 years, I've probably come across my desk, so to
Nice.
speak, and had them on. And so, yeah, I thought, boy, that was a mammoth task to boil it down to the time that you did, and yet to cover what you did to where it was adequate enough. For those familiar, and then those who weren't, then if they wanted more, they had a good thing to, it was a good springboard, so to speak. So
Right.
very good. So I
Yeah, and
do.
really, I just want to inspire people to go and read the Lewis works themselves.
Exactly. Yes. That's what, all the people that write about Lewis, myself included, it's like, yes, we have books about him, but it's hopefully to encourage you to read him even more, and especially stuff that you maybe not be familiar with.
Right.
Very good. Well, Serena, thanks again for being on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, William. Always enjoy talking with you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Serena about her audio-only biography entitled C.S. Lewis, Writer, Scholar, Seeker. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty. My podcast, All About Jack, has been around since 2011. My YouTube channel is called Knowing and Understanding C.S. Lewis. Be sure to check out my new short feature for 2024, Misquotable Mondays and Screwtape Saturdays. Back in 2022, I did a series called Weekly Dose of C.S. Lewis Quotes that I hope you will check out along with my other interviews. Check the show notes for links to items mentioned in the show today. Finally, everything I do related to C.S. Lewis is centralized at my website, essentialcslewis.com. And in case you didn't know, I've written two Lewis-themed books. The Misquotable C.S. Lewis was released in 2018. It examines 75 quotations credited to him that he either didn't write or paraphrases of something he did or without the context could be misunderstood. Then in 2016, my enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters came out. It's called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. Again, thanks for listening. Please consider liking and sharing this episode with others. And don't forget to subscribe to this channel.